Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Friday afternoon. How are you? They're all looking for Dermot's job. This came into ray@rte.ie. My six-year-old daughter, Sorica, listens to your show as I replay the podcast. Every time the child introduces the show, it's the Ray Darcy Show, enjoy the show. She says she'd love to be the voice of the show. Please, 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 is there any way she could be that voice? Well, we're taking guest voiceover artists. We had a couple last week, Luca and Cara, and we had somebody else as well. So if Sorica would like to be a guest voiceover artist on the show, if you record her in your phone or on some device, attach it to an email and send it into ray@rte.ie, Sorica's dream could come true. So there, it's as easy as that. It's as easy as that. Busy morning. We did a lovely pre-record with Jessie Buckley. And you'll know Jessie is an actor and she was nominated for an Oscar. And she was also a winner of an Olivier Award for her performance in Cabaret. She has a new album out, For All Our Days That Tear the Heart. There are a number of singles available on Spotify and I think the album's out in June sometime. Anyway, we pre-recorded a little chat and a tune with her and Bernard Butler and it was amazing. That was lovely and we'll play it out sometime in June. But she's so talented, so talented. Do you know those people you're going, how? It's not fair. It's not fair you're so talented. She can act, she can sing, she's so down to earth. And of course you'd expect that after talking to her parents, Tim and Marina, who are so down to earth as well. So that we did that this morning. We also spoke to a lady who we've spoken to before, Inge-Marie Halling. She is a friend of ABBA and she was at the show last night with the Avatars and we spoke to her about what it's like. So we'll play that out as well. So very busy morning and very busy show as well. If you're into doing a bit of barbecuing over the weekend, the weather's looking good. We have Connor Wilson. Connor Wilson, who you would know from Primetime, is a barbecue nerd. He has read all the books, done all the research, knows the science. So he's coming in to share his vast barbecue knowledge with us. If you have any questions for Connor, ray@rte.ie. I hope the weather's good. I was accosted by Sinead Mooney, who does playback, when I was getting a coffee there. And she said, I heard you saying the weather's going to be good. Better be. If it's not good tomorrow, I'm going to find your phone number and ring you and give out to you. Well, I'm only repeating what I heard on the weather forecast, that there's a high pressure parked over Ireland for the weekend. And that means good weather. So there. Other emails. We got this one in. I'm here tearing my hair out trying to write a wedding speech. I'm the best man at my brother's wedding on Saturday. Must be Saturday week. And for the life of me, I do not know what I'm going to say. I've been getting text after text from me and my brother's mates about how they can't wait to see what I come up with. We all grew up together and we're very close. As a pack of lads, I think we are quite funny. But you know... But you know what, Ray? I feel like the straw taken out of the bale, the weak link, whatever you want to call it. I don't think I'm going to live up to their expectations. Anything I've written down is not funny. It's not clever. And it doesn't even feel like it's from the heart. Maybe you could give me some tips about what makes a great wedding speech, preferably a short one. Yeah, it's a big thing that, like, the public speaking is up there in the top five things that people fear. Like, people have a genuine fear of speaking in public. And if you're going to be a best man, that speech, there's so much pressure. There's so much pressure. And a lot of people, let's be honest, don't do a great job at it. And that probably feeds into the pressure. I've been at a number of weddings, including my own, over the years. And the thing that I have learned from my experience of listening to numerous best man speeches is that the best thing to do is keep it short, you're right there, and speak from the heart. And there's one final thing you have to remember, always mention the bride. I've been at so many weddings and the best man comes up and he says, myself and Mick go way back, remember we went to the rugby in Edinburgh, what? And that's not the type of speech people want. They want to hear how lovely they are together, the newlyweds. They want to hear how the bride has changed your friend that you've known for so long for the good and that sort of thing. And speak from the heart. And then you see this, the other thing that, because there are books and now you go online and you have this formatted speech and you just fill in the gaps of the name of the bride and the groom or fill in the town that you went on a weekend away or whatever. Now, don't do that. Don't do that. Anyway, I'm not an expert. And I know there's loads of weddings coming up, but maybe next week we might get somebody in, some expert on speech making to give us advice. And it's not just for best man speeches, because, you know, a lot of people have to make presentations in work, etc. So it'd be good advice for a lot of people. But anyway, there's my bit of advice. Three things from the heart. Keep it short. Mention the bride. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? What a weekend of sport we have. And if you have a wedding this weekend, it's going to be interfered with by sport. There's no doubt about that. I'm just looking at the timetable for tomorrow. So it kicks off, well, throws in at 3 o'clock with the Munster Senior Football Final. Kerry play Limerick in Fitzgerald Park. Then the Leinster Football Final is on in Croke Park at 5 o'clock. Dublin take on my own Kildare. That's where it gets messy, because if you're a Dublin fan or Kildare fan, you may also be a Leinster fan. And Leinster in the European Champions Cup Final against La Rochelle down in Marseille. And that kicks off at 4:45. So what to do? I don't know what to do. You can record it, but for a lot of people, they're going to have to show their true colours tomorrow. Are they going to go the GA route or the rugby route? What does it say about you as a man or a woman or a child? I don't know. And then all of that will be over. And then the Liverpool supporters will be out and they'll be watching Liverpool take on Real Madrid in the Champions League final. That kicks off at 8 o'clock. So if there's a man or a woman in your life that's a big sports fan, they could be sitting in front of the telly from 8:30 till 10:30 tomorrow night. It's a marathon 8-hour session. And in between there, if you're Leinster and you're Dublin or Kildare, you're going to have to juggle that one. But then the other thing is, you'll be in there and it'll be fine outside and you'll be going, what am I doing in here watching the television? I tried to do this a couple of weeks ago, to put the telly alongside the window and sit out. But there was a reflection. You see, from the. So if anybody knows how you do that, how you leave the telly inside and watch it through a window, please, I'd love to hear your advice on that. 51551 ray at rte.ie. Luke Kelly's house, 1 Hanover Square on Patrick Street, is up for sale for £395,000. Luke Kelly, one of the Dubliners. So he moved in there in 1965 with his wife Deirdre O'Connell. She was an actor, he was a singer. And it's up for sale. It's a 840 square, that'd be metres, wouldn't it? It comprises of an entrance hall, a kitchen with access to the courtyard, living room with loft storage and a bathroom. There's a utility room which doubles as a guest loo and two bedrooms, one in current use as a studio. So that's it. It reminds me back in the day when I was buying my first house and there was an ad on the back of the Sunday Tribune. There used to be ads for property at the back of the Sunday Tribune. And it was a mock Tudor house on the South Circular Road. And the selling point was that it was owned originally by Gay Byrne, the late and great Gay Byrne. Now that caught my attention because I worked in the business. But a house is a house. Does it matter who lived in it before you lived in it? I don't know. But there could be huge Luke Kelly fans out there, and then they might be in the market for a house, or somebody might buy it and turn it into a Luke Kelly museum or something. I don't know. But it's there you go. It's on the market. 395,000. What are you saying? What do you call a line of men queuing for a haircut? A barber queue. Hey, ba-dum-tish. Kieran doesn't like that. He's too tired after all. He's done a day's work already, Kieran has. When it comes to speeches, there are three golden rules. Stand up, speak up, and know when to shut up. Oh, Micheál, you sound like a professional. And Gary says, I used YouTube for help on my own wedding speech. I listened to several best man speeches online and picked one or two things out. Then picked two personal funny stories and spoke about the bride. P.S. Mention the mammies and how well they look always goes down well. It's not easy, but YouTube will help, says Gary. And you know, there must be, I was at a number of weddings where I didn't know the people that well, and you'd be said, oh, wait till you hear Johnny. Wait, he's very funny. He's very, very funny. He's the best man. That's going to be brilliant. And then Johnny gets up and he thinks, yeah, he believes the hype. He thinks that he is a very funny man and probably is out in the pub. But now he's in front of people with a microphone. And he hasn't made notes and he goes rambling off and says all the wrong things. And it's embarrassing. So don't do that. Don't be that Johnny. My boyfriend's driving me mad over the match. We're going to an outdoor wedding tomorrow and he's sweating over where he's going to watch the football. He has me head wrecked. Yeah, yeah. And there's manners involved there and respect for the couple who are getting married. Tell your boyfriend that. What do you mean the weather will be nice tomorrow? It's already a scorcher here in West Cork. Wishing sunshine to the East Coast too. Says, oh, thanks, Grania. That's nice. That's magnanimous of you. You are forgetting the ladies. The Meath ladies take on Dublin at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Sorry about that, Jerry Crosby and Balls Bridge. That's a hugely important game as well. And on the best man speech, another tip, make eye contact with your audience. Keep it short, says Anna. So we will have a list of tips by the end of proceedings today. I mentioned Bernard Butler, who was in today recording with Jesse Buckley. And in our chat, which you will hear sometime in June, you will hear us talk about this song, Him and McAlmont and Yes. Good afternoon, McAlmont and Butler and Yes. 5 on 551 radio.ie. In Tuanua are over in Studio 8 and I'll be running over during an ad break to join them. They're going to sing us two songs. There's about 15 of them over there, so they're going to make a good old sound live from Studio 8 just before 4 o'clock. Most of my family except one are huge Liverpool fans and I cannot ever watch them live. I hide somewhere in the house always. The other son is a Man United fan. Do you not watch them live because of the nerves or something else? Ray, the best man speech, I got to say, in jokes for the lads are a total bore. Yes, you're right there for everyone else. And rambling funny stories, short and sweet, is the way to go. You shouldn't let the lads be pressuring him. But it happens, you see, you have to decide who your audience are. Isn't that the other, it's all coming back to me now. You have to understand who, and if you play your speech to the lads, it's not going to work for the majority of people in the room. See? And here's a joke you might use, or maybe not. Michael is in Sunny Boyle, County Roscommon. I just heard your barber joke, Ray. Here's one. What do you call a German barber? Haircut. Yeah. Thanks, Michael. They didn't like it. Sorry about that. I did my best for you. Right, reeling in the ears. We're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions each on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And there is a prize. And all this week, we say thank you very much to the Fota Island Resort. It's a two-night stay for two people. The resort is in the heart of a peaceful island. It's just 8 miles from city of Cork. So you have a two-night stay, loads of things to do, swimming pool, world-class spa, fine dining restaurant in the cove. There's a golf course and loads of walking tracks in the vicinity. Fotaisland.ie, Fotaisland.ie for more information on this five-star resort. So two people, that's the prize. Two people after 4 o'clock. Here's your qualifying question. Last night in London, fans made the voyage to see their favourite Swedish band reunite in digital form. Who are they? Last night in London, fans made the voyage to see their favourite Swedish band reunite in digital form. Who are they? And we have the answer to that question and more details about last night right after this.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
5 on 551 ray@rte.ie. The stars turned out in force for the premiere of the much anticipated ABBA digital concert in London last night. They were all there. Kylie Minogue, Kate Moss, Penny Lancaster. And there was a real life dancing queen in the audience. The Swedish King Carl Gustaf and his wife Sylvia showed up. And there was Ing-Marie Halling was there as well. We spoke to Ing-Marie last October when the reunion was announced. She's the curator and director of the ABBA Museum in Stockholm. Longtime friend of the band. She's in the London Hotel and she's talking to us now. Hello, Ing-Marie. Very exciting last night.
Hello there. Very exciting. I haven't recovered yet.
Describe it to us.
Well, it's like, how do you describe something that doesn't really exist? I mean, this has never been seen before. It has never been done before. You can't compare it to anything. You can just experience it. And I talked to a friend of mine in London who's working with film, and he's pretty you know, been around the block a couple of times. He was absolutely blown away, and he said, prepare for something you haven't ever expected to see. And I thought he was overdoing it, but it was true, really. You can't explain it. It's like an immersive, you're inside a video. You're not a spectator, you're a participant, really.
Yes, and isn't that very so exciting that it's something that people won't have experienced before? So I'm just looking at the, and you know the history of it, but the band wore these suits with all these detectors on them, and they went through the whole 20 songs, moved as they would move, sang as they would sing.
Exactly.
And then 1,000 digital artists took that information and created these avatars, as they're being called. Was it a little bit, knowing them as you do, and knowing them well, and knowing their mannerisms, was it a little bit freaky for you watching them up there?
It was totally freaky, really.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to see people being sort of animated, as they do in the gaming industry. But I knew that it's actually these four persons that I see, because it's their movements and the way they you know, talk to each other and touch each other and sing and stuff like that. Knowing me, knowing you, there is nothing we can do. Knowing me, knowing you, we just have to face it this time. So it was them, but not them.
Yeah, it's the future, Ing-Marie, it's the future.
And I'm so happy that they pursued this idea, especially Björn and Benny, who's extremely curious persons in new technology and together with music. So good on them, they did it.
Yes.
And they nailed it, I would say.
17.5 million, they're reporting in the paper today, was spent on it. It's the venue is dedicated to this and this only. Which gets me very excited by it.
It's an absolutely beautiful venue. It's a lot of blonde Nordic wood panels in the walls, and very airy and a lot of space and beautiful place.
Yeah, yeah. And you were speaking to Frida before the concert.
I went to see her where she lives now for a week ago, and we talked a lot about this. And obviously, she was a bit, you know, nervous, like any artist would be when they do something like this, or at least perform or something.
Mm.
But when I talked to her just a couple of days ago, she had seen it for the first time, the whole thing, and she was humble and happy and amazed of what they have achieved. So I guess that counts for them all.
So 3,000 people there in the auditorium, including you, and the Queen and King of Sweden. And what was the reaction from the crowd?
Totally bananas. I mean, it was like, I don't know if you've seen the Mamma Mia musical. I guess you have.
Yeah.
Anyway, where people start dancing in the rows from the first song. A lot of that happened yesterday. People were up and dancing, and I saw the King and Queen sitting just in front of me a bit down. They were standing and having a good time, and, you know.
Yeah, in the opening songs, they played a lot of the big hits.
All the big hits. But the thing is also that they, when the new songs came, I Still Have Faith in You, and when Agneta sang her song, it was like, then my tears came, not before that. They came then, because I realized that this is crazy. These guys can do it still.
Yeah.
still have faith in them.
Like, it's 42 years since their last concert in Japan. Yeah.
And if you could write good songs then, of course you can write good songs now. That's nothing that just drops when you're 50 or 60 or 70.
And there's a live band playing there with the Avatars and backing vocalists.
A very good band.
Yeah.
And especially the female drummer. She was crazy good. Crazy good.
Reading the reviews today, 4 and 5 stars. A great rock version of Does Your Mother Know?
Yeah. A good song, especially the rock version.
And then it went completely crazy when the opening bars of their first hit started playing, Waterloo.
Yeah, and that was incorporated with a video from Waterloo, from Brighton 74. So you got it all that evening yesterday. It was all the archive footage, and it was them real life standing on the stage afterwards, and you had it all. The winner takes it all, the loser standing small
beside the victory. So they've thrown down the gauntlet now to other acts, haven't they? Because they have done this and done it so well.
Yeah.
That people like the Rolling Stones, maybe. Maybe we might even see the Beatles back together, Ing-Marie. Virtually.
Difficult, because you can't do it if you don't have live persons.
Yes.
Then, of course, you can do it, but it's not the same thing. Mm. Not the same thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, for one person, like, you know, Elton John, he could do this.
Yes.
He could tour the world for the next
forever. Rod Stewart could do it. Yeah, Rod.
He could definitely do it.
Yeah. Maybe that's why his wife was there last night doing research.
To check it out. She called him afterwards and said, up for the money.
Yeah.
It's not for free, but he can afford it.
How do the people of Sweden feel about the fact that this is in London, England, and not in Stockholm, Sweden?
Well, it's not good to do this in Stockholm.
No.
For the first thing, you can't build a new arena anywhere close to the city centre. And, you know, London is the hub.
Mm.
London is the hub. People can fly one straight flight to London easily from anywhere.
Yes.
Almost. You can't do that in Sweden. So, and also, London has been in their history since their first steps as a band. So I know that in the museum we have a typical British, what do you call it, like a pole that you have in the streets with the street.
A lamppost.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we have all these street names for places that have been important in their career.
Mm.
And now we're going to add one more saying Pudding Mill Lane. London is their place.
Yeah. And Ing-Marie, finally, did they sing the Avatars? Did they sing thank you for the music at the end?
Of course.
Yes. So I say thank you for the music, the songs I'm singing. Thanks for all the joy they're bringing. Who can live without it? I ask in all honesty, what would life be without the song?
When they did Thank You for the Music, there was a lot of tears in people's eyes, because that's what everyone feels. It's a bit of a worn-out phrase these days after so many years with that, but it's still so accurate.
Ing-Marie Halling, a curator and director of the ABBA Museum in Stockholm. It was great to talk to you again, and thanks so much for telling us all about the ABBA reunion. And I'm sure loads of our listeners will be travelling to London to see that. Thanks, Ing-Marie.
Thank you. Nice talking to you.
Mind yourself. I think we managed to fit 10 bits of ABBA songs in there. It looks amazing. It looks out of this world. Listen, I mentioned again for our quiz, we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and be given a chance of winning that lovely weekend away in Fota Island Resort. And the qualifying question is, you will know by now, last night in London, fans made the voyage to see their favourite Swedish band reunite in digital form. Who are they? 0818715925. That's 0818715925. Good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Conor Wilson has joined me in studio. You'll probably know Conor as a reporter with Prime Time, but today it's more a case of prime rib as opposed to prime time. It's quite a meaty topic. See what I'm doing here, Conor? We're going to be covering barbecuing, and we're expecting to get to the bones of the issue today. Yes, because Conor Wilson not only is a reporter on Prime Time, but he's also a barbecue nerd and proud of it.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd use that term, but I can't dispute it. It is accurate. It's definitely accurate.
Answer a couple of questions then. Have you read books on barbecuing?
Yeah, multiple books. Yes. I'm not have read. I'm always reading books about barbecuing.
Have you done experimentation when it comes to barbecuing?
Yeah, projects, you know.
Have you got up at 4 o'clock in the morning to prepare your barbecue for the day ahead?
This is really like, have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? Yeah, I have. I have got up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I've also got up at midnight to set it and then go to bed after that.
Right.
But yeah, I've done all that.
So I think you are a barbecue nerd, Conor Wilson.
And a freak.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you in because you're quite unique in the amount of knowledge you have.
I don't know. There's a huge barbecue community out there. I mean, I think no matter what you're into, whatever your obsession is, there's always people who are into it as well. It doesn't matter how weird it is.
Well, let's trace your obsession back to where it started then. Where did it start?
Well, we're a big food family. You know, we were brought up eating a lot of good food. My mother's a terrific cook. My brother is a chef, Richie Wilson. He's a very successful chef. We would have done a lot of camping, a lot of outdoor stuff. My dad would have barbecued. He wasn't obsessed with barbecuing by any stretch, but, you know, we did a lot of camping and hiking and cooking on small frying pans over little fires with rocks beside rivers and that kind of thing. And I've always been kind of a freak about, well, what can we do with the fire? What can we cook in that? And I drove all my friends mad as I got a bit older with, well, I don't want to cook a dinner. I want to bury a leg of lamb in a pit in the ground. And it's not going to be cooked for 12 hours, but like, it's going to be fun when it's finished. You know?
So that's it. It's part of the ritual around it.
That's it, yeah. It's a big part of it, yeah.
Now, people would argue, Conor, that maybe we don't have the perfect climate for barbecue, because here we are, because we've got a good forecast for the weekend, talking to you about barbecue. In other countries, just take it for granted that they can have a barbecue every weekend.
That's it. Well, I do have a barbecue every weekend.
Do you?
Pretty much, yeah, yeah, yeah. It'd be very rare that I wouldn't grill at least one meal over the weekend. And even during the winter, we could be New Year's Day, Christmas week, that sort of thing. Yeah, if there's snow on the ground, that's fine. It's not a big deal. The only thing that would really stop is really heavy rain. If it's lashing down, you're not going to want to go out there. But usually I'd look ahead to the weekend and I'd say, look, is it going to be raining? Can I get away with it? I'd be looking at the windows and saying, all right, there's going to be a gap between 2 and 5. We can do something there. What can I do? What can I do in that time?
Yeah. And you say the reason that we continue to barbecue, even in climates like our own, is pretty straightforward. It's the taste.
Tastes good, and it's nice to be outside. But every country, every culture has a tradition of cooking over fire, over coals, over wood, whatever it might be. It's there everywhere, and it's endured. And it hasn't endured because people are still cooking on little fires inside their house. It's endured because it tastes really nice.
So it's that sort of nearly half burnt, smoky.
It's not burnt. It might look burnt, but you can get that smoke, that bark onto it, and that's, you can't replicate that in your kitchen indoors. You can't do that in the oven. You can only do that out in the back garden with the fire, with the chunks of wood in there to impart the
smoke. Okay, so it sounds to me, well, we've established you're a purist, so gas is a no-no.
It's not a no-no. Gas is very convenient. Lots of people like to go home in the evening. They crack open the gas barbecue and they put the steaks on and it's all done and dusted very quickly. It's great. I'm not a purist. I'm not a snob. It just doesn't interest me, really.
So that's you it. Use wood?
No, I'd use charcoal.
Charcoal. Does the wood come in then?
If you're cooking low and slow, so if you're doing a brisket or you're doing beef ribs, something that's going to take 10 hours, 12 hours, it's really low and slow. So you're talking about... Yeah, I'm serious. Yeah.
10 or 12 hours?
It could be 15, 16 hours. Depends on the size, but you know, you're cooking on charcoal very low, kind of 110 degrees, and you might put a few nice chunks of oak or cherry or apple wood in there, and that's going to really flavour the meat and give it that bark on the outside. So it's the difference between cooking something in a casserole in your oven for a long time and doing it over the fire like that. You'll get that different flavour.
Right. And you have a partner?
I do. A long, long-suffering partner. And she says herself, you know, I have an obsessive personality, so when I start doing something... I obsess about it, okay. And I talk about it, and I read about it, and I
and you Instagram it.
I do Instagram it. Yeah, always Instagramming.
And the pictures are mouth-watering.
Well, good.
You only put the good stuff up, obviously.
Yeah, we don't have too many disasters. I tend to put everything up, you know, in one shape or form. We haven't had too many disasters over the years, but you know, I usually get good reports back.
Okay, and disasters. Let's talk about disasters then, because the barbecue can fool you into thinking that it's cooked when it's not.
Yeah.
So you cut into it and then it's red raw.
Well, this is the thing. You want to eliminate the guesswork. So the big tip I'd give to anybody who's trying to kind of up their game, or even if you're just having a barbecue with people over this weekend, next weekend, get yourself a meat thermometer. Take the guesswork out. Your steak is going to be cooked to exactly the temperature you want it. Your chicken is going to be cooked. Your burgers are going to be cooked through. So you're not saying, I'm going to just cut this burger in half to see what it's like on the inside. I'm going to cut this chicken in half. You know it's done.
Right.
If the thermometer tells you something, and they're not very expensive, you can get them anywhere.
What mistakes do you reckon people make that lead to barbecue disasters?
I think in Ireland, because the way the weather is, and for most people, there is a barbecue season, and they'll get out of bed on a Saturday, they might get to 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and they go, do you know what, we'll do the barbecue, drag that out of the shed, we've no charcoal, we'll go and get the charcoal, and then they go into the supermarket and they buy the trays of the drumsticks, the burgers, the sausages all together. They buy way too much, they try to do it all at the same time, they're cooking it all over, you know, one hot zone on the grill instead of maybe
spreading it out.
And then there's a load of stuff left over. And it's all piled there on a table with maybe the packet of Bundys and the tub of coleslaw from the supermarket.
So planning.
Planning is the big thing. Right. I'm not saying get up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
No.
But, you know, you can use your morning or afternoon to get some really nice sides ready, because people think all about the meat for barbecues. They don't
That's
think
my problem with barbecues. I always feel underwhelmed at the end of it and unsatisfied.
Well, you shouldn't.
No, because it's the lack of sides. Because you spend so much fussing around the burgers and all that sort of thing and lighting it and all that stuff. And then you look around and go, oh, there's nothing else.
I think that's a really basic mistake. And it is a reason why some people are sort of like, oh, barbecues, you know, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
I think the sides, the vegetables, whatever, the potatoes, the side dishes you're doing, that's every bit
of it. And
as
do you do everything on the barbecue, or would
not
you cheat?
Everything. No. You can do. It's not cheating to do one or two things in the oven. It depends. You can do most things on the barbecue.
Yes.
But it's absolutely not cheating to, you know, do other things in the indoor kitchen, let's say.
Yeah. So you could simply, for example, skewer some red peppers, green peppers, a chunky bit of onion, and put them on. You know, that'd be nice.
You could. Yeah, absolutely.
You
no
wouldn't
problem.
Do that. You're shaking your head.
I might.
You might. Okay. Now, a barbecue weekend in Ballinderry and County Tipperary, June bank holiday, cooking competitions, hot wing eating competition, cold smoking and bread making on barbecues. You can make bread on barbecues.
You can. Absolutely.
You don't.
I have done. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, a few times.
The only question, when is Conor publishing his own book on barbecuing? Have you plans?
I don't have any plans. Let's not rule anything out, but no plans, nothing concrete.
My son-in-law, Donald, cooked the Christmas turkey in the barbecue. It was beyond amazing. He's a wonderful cook. His favourite mother-in-law, Rosary, it could be Rosemary, and she forgot to put in the M. Have you ever cooked turkey in a barbecue?
I have cooked a turkey on a barbecue. I haven't cooked a Christmas turkey on a barbecue, but I'm going to this year because Christmas is in our house this year. And, you know, the big thing of Christmas, you cook the Christmas dinner.
We're having you back in for that. I want
to
know about that.
I have plans. I'm going to do a dry run before then, but, you know.
Okay. Right, the quick do's and don'ts, because we're running out of time here. So how long does it take to get the barbecue up to the right temperature?
Give yourself an hour. Give yourself time. 20 minutes, might take half an hour, but don't mess around with it. Give yourself plenty of time, because the worst thing is people saying, Jesus Christ, you know, people are hungry here now, we need to get the food on, right. And they're throwing it on and it's not ready to be cooked on, and no, it's not going to be good.
And is there a sort of a hierarchy of foods, that what goes on first, what takes the longest, and then work through that, or just throw everything on?
It depends on what you're doing, but I think actually the bigger tip than kind of having a hierarchy of foods is do one thing really well. Do one big kind of centerpiece thing, like a leg of lamb or a nice big piece of beef, like a cote de boeuf or something like that, right. And it's a showstopper. And people aren't picking at these little things, and you've got this great thing to bring to the table. You've got your nice sides, but people are going to remember that.
Right, a centerpiece. And you've given us a recipe for a leg of lamb.
Yeah.
So we're going to put that up on our website. And this is tried and trusted. You've done it.
Absolutely. Many times. Many times. One of the first things I ever cooked on a barbecue in terms of a big cut was a butterflied leg of lamb. It's very forgiving. It's you're not going to go too far wrong with it.
Okay. How long are we talking?
20 minutes to 40 minutes.
All right, okay.
It's not too bad.
Yeah, because as you
it's
know,
hot and fast.
There's a lot of sport on tomorrow, so people will be popping out to the barbecue between matches.
I know. I'm trying to think what's the best way to go for this tomorrow.
Final question. What's the obsession of men with barbecues?
It's a funny thing. I don't necessarily think it's a male thing. I mean, some of the best barbecue chefs in the world are female chefs. There is a thing with men where they think, you know, they can't boil an egg inside the kitchen, but they walk outside and they're Heston Blumenthal, you know. And some people talk about this kind of primal connection that we have to our ancestors poking it. That's all nonsense. Look, we do it because it tastes nice. And maybe men feel like this is a way they can cook and they don't have to feel like it's something to be ashamed of doing it in the kitchen or something. I don't know. It's daft. I don't think it's necessarily a male thing.
I think it's all about equipment. Men like equipment.
That is true.
Whether it's cycling or cooking or whatever, if they can go out and buy a bit of kit. That's true.
You can buy a hell of a lot of kit when you're barbecuing. Yeah. It's an obsessive thing. It's a project thing.
We'll have you in again. The next time we'll talk about your kit. Okay? The next time we have fine weather.
We'll get you in. Listen, no problem. For the moment,
Conor Wilson, thank you very much. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now we've sprinted over to Studio 8 and we're in the company of Intua Nua.
Ray!
I told it was 15-y. So you need...
Hello!
Hey! Oh, hey! Oh, yeah, yeah. So Leslie Dowell, good afternoon. How are you?
Ray.
Do you want to name check all the lads?
Yes, we have Sarge here on keyboards, Con on fiddle, Jack Dublin on bass, Paul Byrne on drums, Johnny on guitar and Dara on acoustic.
Right. And when was the last time you were all together in a room like this?
Pre-pandemic.
Right. Yeah.
No, rehearsal last year for Forever Young, which didn't happen.
Yeah. which has now been called the Forever Cancelled.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So, five times. We were cancelled four times.
Four times?
Yeah.
So it's finally, fingers crossed, drumsticks crossed, everything crossed. It's going to happen on the 15th of July to the 17th of July down in Palmerston in Naas.
Yes.
Palmerston House.
Yes.
And they had a couple of successful ones before the pandemic hit, didn't they? And it's about getting bands like yourselves back together, or some of the bands don't have to get back together.
I think it's about reliving the 80s.
Reliving the 80s, yes.
Yes. Soundtrack of our lives.
Now, this is a scary figure and you know it too well, but next year in Intua Nua we'll be celebrating what?
I have no idea what you're talking about, 40 years.
40 years.
Unbelievable. Oh, yes.
And who was it? You, Paul, put the band together originally? No.
I put it back together.
Oh, you put it back together.
Back together.
Yeah.
In 2004, yeah.
Yeah, and who was the founding member?
It was Ivan and Martin. They're not here.
All right, right.
Yeah. They've left, but yeah, it seems like it was a lifetime ago.
Yeah, it was a lifetime ago.
Someone said, "Are you not going to rehearse?" I said, "We've been rehearsing for 40 years.
Yeah. And it must be the appetite for getting in front of a big crowd must be huge, is it, Jack?
Oh, yeah. Lovely to get back out and do that again. And
Yeah.
Have a look out over the sea of people bouncing up and down. It's great fun. Yeah.
So, what was the biggest crowd you played to?
Milton Keynes, I think, wasn't it? 80,000.
Yeah.
Wow. What about the Nuremberg Ring, Fleetwood Mac? Wasn't that 100,000?
Oh, that was 100,000, yeah.
You supported Fleetwood Mac?
Yes. Yeah.
We did a lot of nice big gigs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100,000.
Bob Dylan was about 79.
Right.
Yeah. We did lots of football stadiums. We did Feyenoord Football Stadium with U2. We did Croke Park with U2 and Simple Minds. We did
one at Turin with
Juventus the old Juventus Football Stadium with the Eurythmics.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
What sort of memories do you relive that in your head of an evening?
You know, if you could remember them, you would.
Well, I remember the Ilimpipe, the bag of the Ilimpipes melted during the sound check in Turin.
Yeah, I remember it was 102 degrees. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Over 100 degrees.
There's a man with a fiddle over there, and he's you know, chomping at the bit. He's ready to go.
He is. He's ready to go.
You really want to get going, don't you? Okay, that's Con on violin. Yeah. What are you gonna sing for us first?
We're gonna sing "Somebody to Love."
Somebody to Love. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, live from Studio 8 in the Radio Centre in RTE in Tuanua, and Somebody to Love. Good, isn't it? That feel good.
Great.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, it does. It really you were rocking it out there, rocking it out. I was at a thing a few years ago with an Emotional Fish were playing, and I can't remember if it was the lead guitarist or the bass player. Anyway, he was telling me that his 21-year-old son was in the audience seeing him play in the band for the first time. So have any you got stories like that?
Yeah, Electric Picnic. We brought all the kids to Electric Picnic in 2012, and that was the first time they saw us. It was great.
Right. And Dara, who's playing acoustic guitar with us today, is my eldest daughter's boyfriend.
Oh, right, there you go.
Keep it in the family.
Cheap labour.
He's got the beard, though.
So it has to be a musician, does it? Jack, it has to be a musician.
Very important, yeah.
And a sound engineer to record all Jack's demos. Yeah.
Did you go up in the estimation when they saw you playing live at Electric Picnic?
Oh, totally.
Yeah,
of course.
Cool dads. Well, you're staying on to play another song for us before the end of the show, Seven Into the Sea. And just remind people that Forever Young Festival is finally on after all the cancellations. And it's from the 15th to 17th July. If you Google it, you'll be able to buy tickets. And Intuanu will be playing on the Saturday. For the moment, thank you very much. Thank you,
Intuanu.
Anish Tosha now, and the Preef Skelton, and Oakta, La Eileen Nicahan. Gurmagad Eileen, thank you very, very much. That's a great sound, isn't it? That was live from Studio 8 in Tuanua. We're back in Seven here, and they'll be performing one more song for us before the end of the show, live from Studio 8. Just a couple of texts on Connor getting hungry listening to Connor Wilson. And Sarah says, here's a great side dish for the barbecue: salad of watermelon, feta, red onion, toasted pumpkin seeds, good olive oil, mint and coriander, and parma ham for extra love. You're welcome, says Sarah. And we cook the turkey in the charcoal kettle grill. Last 20 years. So good, says Karen. And so happy to hear our music teacher, Leslie, and her band on the radio. Stacey, Dean and Katie are listening in from Skullwira na Nord in Shillela. I didn't know. I must talk to her about that when we talk to her again before they sing us out at about 25 past four. Right now, it's time for Reeling in the Ears. Yep. We have two quizzers standing by to answer three questions each. And there is a prize. And it's a two-night stay for two people in Fota Island Resort. Fotaisland.ie. F-O-T-A. Because seemingly it sounds like I'm saying photo and I'm saying Fota. It's probably the Midlands accent. Anyway, loads of things to do down there. The swimming pool, the world-class spa. You'll have dinner on one of the evenings in the Amber Lounge. Or there's the Cove, which is fine dining restaurant. You can go for a walk. It's 5-star, photoisland.ie. And we say good afternoon to Geraldine de Britt. How are you doing, Geraldine?
Hi, Ray. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. You're coming in loudly and clearly. We have the technology.
I've never rung a radio show before, well, except for about 40 years ago. And for some reason, my mobile phone decided not to work the one time I did.
Right. And you had a mobile phone 40 years ago. No, I'm interested because so you don't usually ring into. So you're very welcome on. Thanks very much for ringing. Yeah, and you're out in Sutton. How's the weather out there?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Lovely, blowy, blue skies.
Yeah.
White clouds.
Right.
Gorgeous day.
And you finished work for the day?
I finished work for the day, exactly.
What do you do?
Well, Ray, you won't have a clue what I'm talking about, but I troubleshoot robot Hoovers auf Deutsch usually.
Right. Okay. No, I'm gonna try and put a picture in my head together. So there are, like, you have robot lawnmowers. There are robot Hoovers, and they're probably used by places like hotels and stuff like that. Maybe not, or maybe by people.
Not really. They're better suited to a home.
So a domestic thing.
They're just like a robot, a vacuum cleaner that runs around your home.
Okay, and you speak to people in German because
they're usually home users. They're not businesses, and they just ring up if they've got troubles or some problem with it, and I attempt to help them.
Aha! And what sort of troubles would they have that the robot's trying to take over the house or something? Is that sort of thing?
The robot is, trying to run out the door. The robot is on the cliff edge over your stairs, about to jump.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or it won't connect to the... It has to be connected to your home network so that you can use it over the app.
I would imagine, on a sort of a slightly serious note, that they're very useful for people when they get a bit older.
Well,
no?
Yes, they generally are, but you do kind of need to be a little bit tech-savvy they're not straightforward. You know, it has to be connected to the home network and it has to go in a certain... You know, there can be just some small technical problems.
Right.
But generally, they're quite... If they work... But again, I kind of think they work better in German households, which are properly tidied and don't have endless clutter. How they work in Irish households...
I would like to disassociate myself from that last sentiment of yours. Listen, you're heavy into ABBA and you're going over to see the Avatars.
Yeah, I'm a huge ABBA fan and I'm hoping to go. I have tickets booked in July.
Right. Can I ask you, just because something we didn't cover there with Inge Marie, how much are the tickets?
Well, they vary. Like, you could be spending like nearly €200 depending on where in the auditorium you're sitting.
Right, okay.
But I got kind of, you know, cheaper ones than that. I don't know what the places will be like.
But you can spend up to €200. Okay, you're up against Jessica Bergen, who's in Monkstown in Dublin. It's an all-dub affair today. How are you doing, Jessica?
I'm good, Ray. Thanks. How are you?
Good. You've your hands full, literally, with Josh.
I do. Now, his dad is working from home, so he is physically holding Josh at the moment in a different room. So I am free and up for the quiz.
Okay. What age is Josh?
He is 4 months.
Ah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he had his vaccinations this morning, Ray. His
great.
4 month
that's,
ones,
that's
and
a,
he did
that's,
great.
That's a milestone. Is this your first child?
Yeah, it is. Yes.
Right. How's it going for you?
It's going good. Yeah, no, it's definitely, I didn't really know what was in store and he came a few weeks early for us. So we got quite the shock on the 8th of January, but he's brilliant. He's a little trooper. He's a very content, happy little man.
Great,
so,
great.
Yeah.
And his dad, I believe, is very tall, Chris.
Yeah, his dad is tall. Yeah.
What height is he?
He's 6'5".
Okay.
Yeah, he's tall, so that's probably why baby came early. Yeah, he was ready to come out, and he's flying it now. He's piled on the weight, and he's doing great.
And he's probably walking around, probably playing for Leinster tomorrow.
exactly. Hopefully, one day.
One day. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he weighs a ton. I know all about it. Carrying him around, I'm looking forward to the day when he can sit up himself, and I can pop him in the high chair.
Yeah, because they do that prediction, don't they? The doctor. I don't know what stage they do it, but they're sort of able to tell you now what height your child is going to be, roughly.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, he was trending kind of average size the whole way along. So, like, when he came early for us, we were shocked because, you know, it was a totally normal, healthy pregnancy. But yeah, he was a long baby.
A
long baby is what they called him. Yeah.
They don't say tall babies, they say long babies. That's great.
Long babies,
okay.
Yeah.
Geraldine versus Jessica, 3 questions each. Yeah. If you go for short clips, Geraldine and Jessica, you get 2 points. If you go for a longer clip, it's easier, so you get 1 point. Whoever answers, whoever gets most points is the winner. However, if it's a draw, we go to a tie-break situation. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Great.
Right, Geraldine, the year is 1986 and we're starting at the movies. So would you like a long clip or a short clip?
I'll go with a short clip.
Short clip, okay. This 1986 American coming-of-age story was directed by Rob Reiner and based on Stephen King's 1982 novella, The Body. Can you name the movie? Here's your clip.
threw away the map. Vern had been trying to find those pennies for 9 months.
Well, I did read a good bit of Stephen King in the 80s. It's not the Tommyknockers, is it?
No. It's Stand By Me. Right, early days, don't fret. Jessica, 1986, the movies.
That was before my time, Ray, so I don't look, have high hopes here.
Did you hear the way she said that, Geraldine? It was before my time, yes.
Yeah.
So, well, do you want to go long or short?
I'll go long.
You
I
go long.
I need all the help I can get. Yeah.
Okay, in 1986, this American-Irish animated film about an emigrant mouse who gets separated from his family was released. Can you name the movie? And here is your long clip.
Cats!
I didn't see any cats.
Won't it be nice to get to America where we don't have to worry about cats anymore? There are no cats in America.
I don't think that's true, but...
No, I don't know it, even though I remember watching it. Sorry, I don't know.
You'll be kicking it. An American Tail. That's what it is, an American Tail.
An American Tail.
T-A-I-L. Okay, so an even start. Back to you, Geraldine. Music from 1986. Would you like a long clip or a short clip?
I'll try a short clip.
Short
again.
Clip, okay. This one topped the charts in Ireland. Can you name the song or the singer? Here we go.
My friends keep telling me to give it up.
Say I'm too young, I ought to live it up. Oh, Madonna.
Yes.
Papa Don't Preach.
Yeah. You don't get any extra points for that, but it is Papa Don't Preach. You get 2 points for the Madonna part of it. Right, you're on the scoreboard. Jessica, music from 1986.
I'll take a long one.
A long one, okay. This song was absolutely everywhere in 1986. Can you name the song or the singer? Here's your long clip.
Emotion in my foolish love's gay. All the sailors ocean find the lovers no shame.
Take My Breath Away?
Yes, well done. You were going to sing it there, like Geraldine.
Yeah.
You get a point for that, and that's sort of back in the news because it was written for Top Gun, and of course the sequel to Top Gun is in the cinemas this weekend. It won an Oscar and a Golden Globe for Best Original Song back in 1986. Now, Jessica, you're on one. Geraldine, you're on two. I suppose the good news for you, Geraldine, and the bad news for Jessica is that if you go for a two-pointer here and get it right, Jessica can't catch you. However, if you go for a one-pointer, get it right, then Jessica goes for a two-pointer. It brings us to a tie-break situation. So what's it going to be?
Are you asking me whether I'll go for 2 points or 1 point?
That's exactly what I'm asking you.
I suppose I'll just try a two-pointer.
A two-pointer. Okay. This will win it for you if you get it right. In 1986, a new building was opened in the ILEC Shopping Centre in Dublin City Centre. What was it? Here is your short clip.
A place you can come and borrow a picture. It's a place you can bring the children and let them browse children's activities.
The Irish Life Mall Shopping Centre.
No.
So, can you just repeat the question, Ray?
Say again?
But can you just repeat the question?
Yeah. A new building was opened in the ILEC Shopping Centre in Dublin City Centre. What was it?
Yes.
What was it? So a new building was opened in the ILEC Shopping Centre in Dublin City Centre. What was it?
I would say it was a library.
You're right.
Dublin City Library.
It was a library, yes. You get 2 points for that.
Well done, Darren.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I'm sorry, I misheard the... I thought you said the... I wasn't sure, was it the Irish Life Mall or the Irish... ILEC
and you
Centre.
Just needed to hear that again, yes. There was sometimes the line breaks up. So... Well done on that. Jessica, sorry about that. We're going to send you out a couple of Ray Darcy Show mugs and give little Josh a little hug for us.
I will.
Yeah,
thanks,
lovely to talk to you. Have a nice weekend. Thanks, Jessica.
Thanks,
bye now.
Bye.
Well done, Geraldine. You're off to Photo Island, photoisland.ie for all the information. So that's sort of a good start to the weekend, isn't it? Gone. Okay.
It was the 80s and...
Oh, no, we're okay. We'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, it's written in our contracts that we can do puns on a Friday. That's what it says in their contracts. So if you've had a bit of a rough week, then this Saturday and Sunday at Leopardstown Racecourse might be just the thing to get you back to your barking best. The Irish Kennel Club are holding a special show to celebrate dog breeds from around the world, including the 9 native Irish dog breeds protected by UNESCO. Sorry, it's getting bad. Maybe the kids are hounding you for a bit of different, something different to do. Then it's just the thing to have them rolling over with excitement. Okay, enough puns. We just pause it there and introduce our guests. Sean Delmar, how are you doing, Sean?
Hello, Ray.
Thanks for coming in. And Marion Finney, how are you doing, Marion?
Very well, thank you. Lovely to be
now,
here.
Now, it's great to have you in, but even better to have your pets. So who have you got with you, Marion?
I have Spock with me. Spock is called, show name is Irish champion Gala Vulcan.
Yeah.
And he's a very nice, big Irish wolfhound.
How tall is he?
He is about 34 inches at the shoulder.
Wow.
And he's about 160 pounds in weight.
He's a handsome devil.
Isn't he just?
Yeah. We were watching Paddington 2 at home last night. I don't know if you've ever seen it. But there's a brilliant scene where Paddington chases Hugh Grant. Hugh Grant's on a bike and Paddington's on the back of an Irish wolfhound. It's an amazing scene.
Wonderful. You must watch it.
Yeah, yeah, you must watch it. And Rinty is with you, Sean.
He is, yeah. He's a Kerry Blue Terrier, Rinty.
Yeah, and those two are two of the 9 native Irish dog breeds.
Yeah, they're actually at both ends of the spectrum.
Right.
The wolfhound was the dog of the kings and the gentry of Ireland, and they were used as trophies sent all over Europe during the various centuries. But Michael Collins, as a mark of independence, brought forward the Kerry Blue as the dog of the people.
Did he?
yeah, he did in 1922.
And he had a Kerry Blue of his own.
He had, exactly, yeah, he had. Yeah. As the name of the Kerry Blue entered in the catalogue at the time was Convict 224, and that actually was De Valera's prison number in Manchester jail.
Right.
So it's funny the way things work. And
come here, Convict 224. Here, boy. Convict 224. Like, that's a mouthful, isn't it? So he was so fond of the breed that he put a trophy in place.
He put up a trophy in 1922, and we have it here. It's a pure silver trophy, and this is still competed for today for best of breed at our championship show, and it's the Mihaly Coelan trophy, and he presented to the club of which he was a member of. There was another trophy presented at the same time by Captain Wyndham Quinn, who was attached to the Vice Regal's Lodge in the Phoenix Park, which is now actually ours on Newton. But he was supposedly on the opposite side. But it's funny that they both presented trophies to the club and they both competed against each other with their dogs.
United in their love of dogs,
exactly,
I suppose.
Yeah.
So if I'm holding this, I'm holding something that Michael Collins held.
Absolutely.
Wow.
He bought it in Weirs and he presented it to the club. It was born in Weirs of Grafton Street and he presented it to the club.
It's an attractive, sleek looking trophy, I have to say.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's so many of our people come along even to get their photograph taken
with
the trophy.
With the trophy as opposed to the dogs. Now, Spock, the Irish Wolfhound, they're a very relaxed. They have a very relaxed temperament.
Yes,
don't
they're very, very nice. They're very relaxed. Yeah. They make wonderful pets.
Yeah.
And they're very, very... the only thing that frightens people is their size. But when they get to know them, they realise what lovely animals they are. And our logo for our breed is fierce when provoked and gentle when stroked. But it's generally gentle when stroked.
Fierce when provoked, but gentle when stroked. Oh, that's lovely.
And it's generally when stroked, they're very, very gentle.
Yeah.
And they're wonderful with children and they're just very, very nice dogs. But you do need space to keep them.
You do. And they take a lot of feeding, I would imagine.
They take feeding and exercise.
Yes. And it's the thing that comes up on the show all the time, but there must be a monster poo there, is there?
There is.
Yes.
we prefer to do it before breakfast and that's it for the day. Pick it up.
Right. Would you need a shovel now?
Or a
JCB?
Shovel. Yeah, a big shovel.
But it's going to be great. It's going to be great in Leopardstown on Sunday. I'm just looking at the other breeds that are the 9 native Irish breeds. Kerry Beagle, Irish Water Spaniel, Irish Red Setter. They're an attractive dog as well, aren't they? Irish Red and White Setter, Irish Terrier, Irish Glen of Amal Terrier, and the Irish Soft Coated Wheaton Terrier. Yeah.
Yeah, we got heritage status, as you said there at the start, which is great. And it means that the government kind of commits to protecting them because they're uniquely and particularly Irish. And right through the centuries, so many people in Irish history have had an interaction with these breeds, like Grainne Whale with the Irish Water Spaniel, because her trips in and out of Spain, where they had water dogs.
Come back, Rinty.
come up here. So that was that. And Daniel O'Connell. the Liberator. He had a Kerry Beagle.
Did he?
So, yeah. Right. And as we said, Michael Collins.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
if you look in the National Gallery, there's a picture of the drowned fisherman's child, probably to do it on a cocoon. But that's a Wheaton Terrier. You can clearly see it. So there's so many different...
Were you both always dog lovers, Marion?
Yes,
you were?
Definitely, definitely.
Did you grow up with dogs around you?
I grew up with dogs. I always loved dogs. And I was very lucky. I married a man who had the same interest.
Yeah.
And we've had wolfhounds now over 50 years. And they're very much part of our life and our lifestyle and everything else. And we show and we get not just everything. We get so much enjoyment out of them. They're just part of our genes. And remember, we're also part of the history of the country, which yes. is so important.
And the grey-black thing. That's their colour.
Yeah, well,
it's not an ageing thing. No, they go grey.
No, yes, no. They actually the standard says white to black nearly.
Right.
But he's a grey brindle.
And what age is Spot?
He's 4 years old.
Right. They don't live as long as smaller dogs.
No, they don't. That is the thing. Bigger dogs, all giant breeds don't live as long as small dogs.
Right.
So the average wolfhound age is 8 to 10. But like things are improving with more health research and everything that's going on, like in all canine breeds, and but. They're just a magic to live with.
Yeah, and was there a time then in Ireland where there were only those breeds? But there was obviously crossbreeding all the time, wasn't there?
No, yeah, no. That's as I was saying, the kind of the hounds, the big hounds yeah. like the wolfhounds were the dogs of the High Kings of
yes,
Ireland.
Yeah.
And they were serious, kind of considered internationally. We were famous, even back in the Roman times, there's kind of writing things about where they exported to the Colosseum over there, 7 wolfhounds from Ireland. So that's way, way before things.
Yeah.
The Terriers of Ireland were all intermixed working dogs. They were meant to be multi-purpose dogs, guarding.
What sort of work would they do?
Vermin control,
right?
Guarding
yeah.
the sheep,
yeah.
protecting the sheep, a little bit of herding, and more or less companionship and guard dog, all of those things, because the peasants, for want of a better word, weren't allowed to have kind of the dogs of the kingly size. And the same with the working gun dogs. They were the earls of the country. They had those and they had to be landowners and they went on horseback and using
so you know a man's station in society by the dog he was attached to.
That's exactly the way it was wow. on the thing. And that's why...
So I have a golden retriever. What does that make me?
That, English.
And alas, Apso, Tibetan. Is
yes.
Just talking about Marion saying about the expression, you know, and what they said. The expression of a Kerry Blue should be, are you talking to me?
That's right.
That's there's not a... isn't there?
Here, Rinty.
And the name, finally, Kerry Blue, because he's black.
Yeah. yeah. Well, they're born black.
Right.
They're born soot black and they eventually turn, grow as they get older. He's just over a year at the moment.
Oh, so they turn blue.
So they turn blue. A bit like us.
Yes, yeah. Well, yeah. Or bald or whatever, yeah.
Well, hopefully they don't turn
bald. Don't turn bald, that'd be, yeah. I'm just referring to my own hair. So it's this Sunday in Leopardstown Racecourse, I'd imagine from the afternoon, or is it early morning, or when does it start?
No, it starts off, I mean, the whole programme, the serious programme, would start from about 12 onwards.
Right.
And it's meant to be an introduction to the world of pedigree dogs
yes.
and what the impact they have on our life and the variety of dogs, and particularly the format of the Irish breeds, obviously.
Yeah.
So I think people, as you quite rightly said, they're not really aware of the Irish breeds that
no,
much.
No, they're not.
And I think if we can get that message across, we have some amazing breeds that are accepted worldwide as beautiful and so popular.
And now protected by UNESCO.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
yeah
so,
yeah.
I mean, it's important that we get that message across, I think. Another yeah. thing we're doing, we're giving our Hero Dog Award. We started that, the Golden Paws Award, and we are going to give an honorary one to the Patron, the dog in Ukraine that sniffed out the thing.
Ah,
so
right.
we're giving an honorary
award. That's a lovely thing.
We're giving
a
Golden Paws Award to him, and right. a representative from the embassy, from the Ukrainian embassy, will be accepting it on the
oh,
day.
That's amazing.
And it's start of our programme to create Ireland's hero dogs, which we'll be doing over the next 2 or 3 months.
We'll talk to you again. Sean Great. Delmar from the Irish Kennel Club, and indeed the president of the Irish Kennel Club, and Marion Finney, wolfhound owner. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank
Have a lovely weekend,
us.
And I hope it goes well on Sunday. Now
Thank
we're going
you.
Back over to Studio 8 to Intuanua. Hello, Intuanua.
Hello, Ray.
So the Forever Young Festival, 15th to 17th of July down at Palmerston House in Naas. On the Saturday night, you will see Intuanua, and they will be singing all their hits. And this one in particular, 7 Into the Sea, When You Are Ready. We'll be right back. Great finish in Tuanua, Seven Into the Sea, performing at the Forever Young Festival. And the pupils of Sculwhara na n-Ord said hello to you, Leslie Dowdle from Shillelagh, just so you know. That's it from us. We are back on Monday. If you're doing a barbecue over the weekend and you want Conor Wilson's recipe for leg of lamb, it's up there on our website. Barbecued leg of lamb with crispy potato salad. It sounds delicious. That's it from us. Have a great weekend, whatever you're doing. Good luck to all the sporting teams that are taking part in various competitions over the weekend. John Cook is presenting Drive Time today, and he's up after this.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.